For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, December 4th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been watching. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com. And joining me on today's episode is Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ. Sorry, I'm still a little sick. You could probably tell from my voice. But what have you been doing recently? We'll talk about what we've been watching momentarily, but we got a couple things to get to before that.
Sure. So last weekend, I hosted a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. I will say a sold out screening, not to brag, but I got to host a screening of the Rocky Horror Picture Show out here in Los Angeles and announced that I will be starting a shadow cast because there currently is not one on the side of the city that I'm in, which is really, really cool. It was awesome.
Hang on, BJ. Let me stop you. What is a shadow cast? What is that?
Okay. Ben, have you ever seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have seen the movie one time, yes, but I've not seen it in a public setting. I realize that there's like a whole culture around it, yes.
Yeah, so we in the biz like to say, okay, well, that's just masturbation. That's not the real thing. So Rocky Horror Picture Show, as many people know, have had midnight screenings dating back to the 70s. There are some theaters that have never stopped having midnight screenings of it. I can say that in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that is a city that has had Rocky Horror screenings at least once a month at midnight nonstop since the 70s. They have the world record. It's very, very cool. But in a lot of these midnight screenings, you have what is called a shadow cast, which is people in costume with props that will act out the movie in front of the screen on the stage, or, you know, just at the front of the house of the theater. It is a vital part of sort of the culture around Rocky Horror. There are games that are played beforehand, and it just really adds to the fun. It's like getting to watch a movie within a movie. It's very cool because they also, like, you lip sync to what's on the screen behind you. So you still get the audio of the movie, but it's just like an enhanced, very interactive experience. So I am starting a shadow cast. I am getting actors together so that we will now have people to do this along with the screenings when we show them at Vidiot's here in Los Angeles.
Wow, that's awesome. So is Vidiot's paying you to do that? Or is this just something you're doing like as a volunteer for the love of the game kind of thing?
I'm doing this for the love of the game because I love Rocky Horror. It is a deep part of my being. It is a huge contributing factor to why I love movies and the culture of movies. I used to sneak into Rocky Horror in Chicago and Milwaukee as a teenager. I went all the way through my 20s. I've been in the live stage production multiple times as different characters. I go to Rocky Horror screenings. If I'm in a major city and they have one that night, I'll go and see one. I've directed a shadow cast when I was in college for like a charity fundraiser screening. I'm really, really into it. And a thing that I think has gotten lost in recent years when people are reassessing art from earlier time periods is that I think people forget that Rocky Horror isn't just a movie. These midnight screenings used to, historically speaking, used to be one of the only places where queer people could be openly queer and trans people could be openly trans and not have to worry about being met with violence or being arrested, especially in more conservative parts of the country. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. It's starting to feel like Rocky Horror screenings are going to become sanctuaries again. That was definitely kind of the energy that was in the room during our screening. But it was also just really, really, really cool because there were people there that were old. Like, I don't want to, like, I say that as like a neutral term, but there were like elderly people there that are like, oh my God, yeah, I went to my first Rocky Horror screening in 1975 and now they're here at my screening. And then at the same time, there was like an 11-year-old boy in full Frankenfurter costume who was like, this is my favorite movie I've ever seen in my life. And like, just like, I don't know of any other movie that has that sort of like generational reach where it is just as important to those demographics for kind of the same reason.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So you hosted that screening. I assume it went well since it was sold out. What is it actually like? What does hosting a screening entail? Do you get up in front of everybody and say something before and after the movie? Or like, what is that process like for people who have never seen that?
Yeah, sure. So it's different for every screening. If you have like a well-established cast, there's usually a lot more things. Like there's, you know, Virgin Games, where if it's your first time ever seeing it with a crowd, you can volunteer. No one's ever forced to do something they're not, but you can volunteer to play games. So for this one, we didn't have like a ton of time because I had to be like, hey, we're doing a shadow cast and like get that information out there. So what I did is I asked, you know, who's the youngest person in here? And this is how I found that 11-year-old. And I gifted him a vintage Rocky Horror trivia game that was made, I think, like in like the late 80s or early 90s. And I was like, this is for you. This is for you to corrupt all of your friends with. And like, this kid was so happy. Just like, oh my God. But yeah, there's, you know, there's rules at the front. So I have to give rules, but it's also, you know, very fun. Like, you know, one of the things that I do is I have people spell out, like, give me a B, give me an R, give me an A, give me a D. What's that spell? That's right. That spells asshole. And if you thought it spelled Brad, now I know where the virgins are. And like, so that's how you welcome people into the fold. But it's, you know, giving people the lay of the land. Like, yes, you can get up and do the time warp, but if you touch the movie screen, you will get kicked out. So don't do it. You know, things like that. But it's a way to set the tone, have a lot of fun. And then something that I always incorporate is, because Los Angeles is a lot more of a like a progressive city, is the evergreen reminder that some of the call outs that people say are in bad taste, but these are jokes that have been passed on for next year will be 50 years. And a lot of the people who came up with these jokes in New York City, in Los Angeles, in cities across the world, a lot of them aren't with us anymore. And we keep their legacy alive by continuing to say the jokes that they came up with.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it's like a religious experience. It's like church.
Man. Yeah. That's wild. That's really cool. Okay. So you hosted that one and then you have another screening that you're going to be hosting pretty soon, right?
Yeah. So if any of our listeners are hearing this on December 7th, so this Saturday, my wife and I are hosting a screening of Sleepaway Camp, another queer horror classic. And it's a 9:45 PM screening, but it also doubles as a book signing because we are going to have copies of our Sleepaway Camp book. But I'm very, very excited because we have been finding out that a lot of people going don't know the ending of Sleepaway Camp, which is, I'm not going to spoil here if other people listening also have not seen Sleepaway Camp and don't know the ending. But that's why we wrote a whole book, is because of like a 10-second clip that completely changes what the entire movie means. So I'm very, very excited to get to host that screening. We're going to talk about it, you know, answer questions, do book signing, and get to experience watching that movie with a crowd of people.
Amazing. Okay, so speaking of books, let's get into the what we've been reading section. I recently read a mysterious book that I can't talk about quite yet, but I am going to devote an entire episode of this podcast to it later this month. I think it'll run, right now my plan is for it to run the Monday right before Christmas. So I think I will be on vacation at that point, but I'm going to bank the episode and have it go up during that week. So we at least have something during the Christmas week for listeners who are trapped at their homes and desperately trying to, you know, come up with something to do in wherever their hometowns are or whatever. Okay, so I'll get more into that later on. But what have you been reading recently, BJ?
So I love autobiographies. And I love autobiographies of just very interesting people. So I am currently reading Confess, the autobiography of Rob Halford, you know, the front man of Judas Priest. But I'm specifically listening to the audiobook because he narrates it himself. And he is just such a fascinating person. And this book ended up on my radar because of author Mallory O'Meara recommended it to me. She was like, I think this will be a book you're really going to be into, and you got to listen to the audiobook. And it's so fascinating because Rob Halford as a figure has sort of been, you know, lionized in pop culture as like, you know, he's this like very cool, like heavy metal front man, and he just happens to be gay. And the autobiography sort of takes the inverse about it, where it's like, no, Rob Halford is like a very cool gay man who just happens to be the front man of like one of the most important heavy metal groups to ever exist. And so it's a lot of his like personal stories that are mostly about him being like a wild gay dude and like cruising back, you know, when that was a thing people did more often. And, you know, then scattered in throughout is like, yeah, and also I was in Judas Priest and here's the wild stuff that I did in Judas Priest. And so it's just very, very cool because there's something about his delivery in his audiobook where he's both like clearly proud of the life that he's lived, but is also just like, man, like, what did I get myself into? And I just like that. It's so honest. And it's very cool. If people don't follow him on Instagram, they should, because it's mostly him talking about metal, talking about like Tom of Finland gay stuff and pictures of cats. Like, that is the extent of Rob Halford's Instagram account.
Okay, so that book is called Confess, the Autobiography of Rob Halford, and you're listening to it in the audiobook form. Let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into what we've been watching.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
All right, what have you been watching recently, BJ?
I've been watching a lot of stuff. So the first one was that the other night I went to the Los Angeles premiere of Kyle Mooney's Y2K. And okay, this movie is either going to be really for people or they're not going to get it at all. And I will say that in the theater, it was a combination of like people who worked on the movie, people who were famous in the 90s, press who were alive in the 90s, and then a bunch of like very young, hot influencers that I don't think were alive in 1999. And the reason I think that is because there are like these very hyper-specific jokes in this movie that like wrecked me and they were completely unmoved by. And I'm like, oh, you don't understand why this is funny because you weren't alive. I have aged to dust. But it is a bit of a stoner comedy. So if that sort of humor doesn't work for people, then like this is probably not going to work for them. But this is totally a like take an edible, watch with friends, hoot and holler kind of movie. Yeah, had a lot of dumb fun with this one.
Okay, so yeah, this is Kyle Mooney's, I think, second feature. And I know he directed Brigsby Bear.
Brigsby Bear.
Yeah. So yeah, this one is set in 1999, New Year's Eve, like as the clock changes over into the millennium. And from the trailer, I gather that it's like the Y2K chaos and problem that everyone anticipated might happen actually happens. And there's like a robot uprising or something, right? That's the,
yep,
the
pretty much
gist of it.
Yep, that's pretty much it. And there's also these very incredible practical like digital robot monsters that are done by Weta Effects, and it is like they're very, very cool because all the machines start to work together and sort of essentially turn themselves into like, calling them kaiju is not accurate, they're not that big, but like these giant robot monsters, and they're totally practical. Like, it's very much like there's a guy in a suit wearing a TV for a head. Like, it's really, really cool. They did some good effects. So it's really goofy, it's like a little gory, very, very fun, but there are some wild like 90s references that are gonna make you have a little bit of an existential crisis.
Okay, well, stay tuned because I think Brad did some interviews with the folks, with Kyle Mooney and some of the other folks behind that movie. So hopefully we're going to have an episode devoted to that on Friday. What else have you been watching, PJ?
All right, so I watched Working Girls, emphasis on Working Girls, not Working Girl. This is directed by Lizzie Borden. It's from 1986. This is a sex worker movie. And it is presented the way that any like workplace drama would be, but they just happen to work at a brothel in New York City. And it is this really interesting look at sex workers, full service sex workers of the 1980s, and how it really is just like a day's work. Like sometimes your boss tells you that you have to stay late and you had plans and now you're bummed out that you have to stay and work late. Sometimes the clients that you work with are awesome and you look forward to seeing them. Sometimes they suck and they're really dehumanizing and you don't want to deal with them. Some of your coworkers are people that you love and you'd do anything for. Some of your coworkers are people that you just wish would get out of the way because they're holding you back. It's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. I hadn't seen this since college. Rewatched it with my wife and was just like floored by how great this movie is, how well it continues to hold up. And we just don't make movies like this anymore.
Okay, so I'm looking and this right now seems to be streaming on Max. Is that correct? Is that where you watch this?
We rented this one from Vidiots because we get free rentals. So we like to find weird movies and grab it. But if it's streaming on Max, it's probably that.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking right now. Yeah, it looks like Max and the Criterion channel. So check that out. Working Girls. That's
awesome. Oh, yeah. This does have a Criterion release. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, I've never seen this one. I've never even heard of it. So I'll have to check that out. All right. Next up. It looks like we've been catching up on sort of like end of the year stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. I've got so many. Like there are some on your list that I also saw but didn't include because I figured we'd talk about it when you do. But I also saw Janet Planet. This is a coming of age movie set in 1991 about a 11-year-old girl named Lacey, and she's spending, you know, the summer with her single mom named Janet. And it's just about, you know, the different people that her mom is kind of like staying with, or, you know, sometimes it's romantic, sometimes it's just friendship. And it's just this little time capsule of this summer, but it is such a powerful musing on like childhood loneliness and, you know, what it's like when you're young and you have a single parent and your life is kind of constantly changing depending on like who your parents are involved with, because you don't really have a say in any of this. Just really, really great stuff. Cannot believe that this is Annie Baker is her name, her first movie, because it is just so damn good.
Okay, so that's called Janet Planet, and that actually is streaming on Max as well. This one's been on my list for a little while. I still haven't had a chance to get around to it, but yeah, now that I didn't realize it was streaming on Max, so that'll make it a lot easier to seek out, hopefully, for our listeners as well. So Janet Planet is the name of the movie, and then what's the next one you want to talk about?
And the last one I want to talk about is I caught Sweethearts. This one is a Max original or Max exclusive, whatever the label is they use.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and it is a Thanksgiving rom-com about friends, and it's about these two friends who go to the same college, and they're realizing after, you know, the first couple of months away at school that they need to break up with their high school sweethearts because they are feeling very stifled and held back at college. So they're going home for Thanksgiving with the intention of breaking up with their respective partners. And of course, then it turns into like a comedy of errors sort of situation, because that's how a lot of these rom-coms work. And then there's a side story happening with all of this where their third friend, played by Caleb Heron, who is a fantastic comedian, he's having this like side journey of him wanting to come out to his family at the same time. So you have these two very different like big deal experiences happening to a friend group back in their hometown. And it's really sweet. Like there are some moments of it where it's like, okay, yeah, this is a direct to streaming movie for sure. But I think the characters are really well developed. Honestly, I think Caleb Heron should have just had his own movie. And this made me very excited for, I think Trash Mountain is what it's called, the movie that he's making with Lily Wachowski, because like he just commands that whole movie. But Kieran and Shipka's in this movie. She's fantastic. It's a really, really fun, breezy watch. And another addition to the Thanksgiving movie canon, which is a subgenre that doesn't have nearly as many entries as it should.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It's kind of slim pickings when it comes to that. So I'm always interested to see somebody try to fill a niche like that. So it sounds like they did that, and this movie actually ended up turning out well. So that's always nice too, when it's not just like some crap filling the slot. So excellent. Okay, well, let's get into what I've been watching. I actually recently watched two movies that I saw about trans characters, both of which were big swings, but only one of which I actually enjoyed. So I want to talk about Emilia Perez.
Curious to see if we're aligned in this or not.
So Emilia Perez is the first one. This is streaming on Netflix right now. And this is being talked about as like a potential best picture winner. I know it's like certainly being talked about in terms of like best international feature kind of thing. And like definitely a big Oscar player type of movie. And I respect the attempt here, but boy, this one just did not work for me.
Oh, thank God.
Okay, so the basic story is about a Mexican cartel leader who is presenting as a man and recruits a lawyer played by Zoe Saldana to help her basically fake her own death so she can transition into a woman. And it is a musical, but it's not a traditional musical. People just kind of break out into song sometimes and then occasionally whisper sing lines of dialogue. And it reminded me a little bit of Annette.
It wants to be Annette so bad.
Okay, good. I'm glad that I wasn't the only person who made that connection. And Annette was like a fairly little scene Adam Driver, Marion Cotillard movie from a few years ago. But the musical component of Emilia Perez, I just thought was like a huge whiff. There are a couple of pretty cool moments here. There's like a dinner conversation between Zoe Saldana and Carlos Sofia Gascon is the main character of the movie. That dinner scene where those characters like go their separate ways for a number of years and then come back together, and it's revealed that, oh my God, this person is the person that I used to work with all those years ago, like that kind of thing. And I thought that was pretty electrifying as a scene. And then Zoe has one big musical number where she's singing about corruption in her city at this fancy gala, and she like stops time, and there's this big spotlight that comes on her, and she's like dancing across tables and performs this really cool choreography. But the tones of this movie are all over the place. Like there are shootouts and family squabbles and social commentaries and this like subplot about the former cartel leader trying to find redemption by starting a nonprofit that helps locate citizens who have been kidnapped and killed by the cartel that she ordered, you know, a lot of these people's deaths. And it feels like the movie has no actual identity, and it feels like way too ambitious for its own good. I appreciate the director was trying for something, and I think maybe if the music had worked, it would have done a lot of work toward like pulling everything together and making it feel more cohesive for me. But I just kind of thought the songs were so unmemorable that I just could not connect with this in the slightest. So what did you think about this one?
Well, my mother always told me that if I had nothing nice to say, to shut my mouth. This movie, okay, listen, the memes have been hilarious, at least. We have that. And I do think that Zoe Saldana is trying very hard and really kind of making some magic out of nothing here. But this movie is hilariously regressive, in my opinion. It does nothing for me.
Yeah, and Selena Gomez is in this too. Like I think the three of them won collectively like a Best Actress prize. It might have been at Cannes or something, at some prestigious film festival. I don't remember which one it was. And I just thought Selena Gomez was just like, she just did not really work in this movie. And I don't know. I mean, I like her in Only Murders in the Building, but I don't know if it was this character that she was being asked to play here and just like wasn't really given a lot to do there or what. But I just thought a lot of this movie was just kind of like a, well, that happened kind of thing, instead of me being like emotionally drawn into the characters or the plotting or anything like that. So this one just didn't really work for me, but I'm so curious to see if this becomes like an Oscar darling or something, because that would just be like one of the most baffling things to happen in a long time.
I mean, if it does, then we know fully that we have entered our like Green Book but for trans stories phase of the Oscars, because what is this?
Okay, so yeah, if you want to check out the weirdness that is Emilia Perez, it's on Netflix right now. The second movie is The People's Joker.
Hell,
which
yes.
Came out earlier this year. I think it, I want to say it ran the festival circuit like a year or two ago and finally got like a real release earlier this year. Is that right?
So it was supposed to premiere at, I believe, TIFF, one of those fests, it like played one night and then they got slapped with a cease and desist. And so then it took a while for them to figure out, okay, well, how can we make sure that this is like ironclad? We cannot be sued. This is covered under parody law. And then once that was figured out, then it went back out, did some fests. Then it did a tour across the country where director Vera Drew was like showing up at theaters and screening the movie for people. And that is how like it really became sort of the sensation that it is, because it became an event where people were like, you know, dressing up like clowns and showing up to their local like art house theater or rep theater to check it out.
Okay, cool. So yeah, this is co-written and directed by Vera Drew. And I had heard that she was using the framework of DC Comics characters to tell an autobiographical story about her own life experience. And that's part of the lawsuit that you're talking about, because there's so much imagery here and references to Batman and the Joker and Harley Quinn and all these, you know, DC Comics characters that we all know. And I knew that it was supposed to be a comedy, but I didn't really know much else about it. And I finally got a chance to check this out on a screener, like an awards season screener, end of the year type of thing. And I did not expect this to feel so personal. It's a very handmade movie. The graphics are like purposefully janky. There's animation that looks like it's from Homestar Runner or something like that. And a lot of it is shot against green screens. There's this really lo-fi DIY quality to everything that kind of feels endearing. And interestingly, Vera Drew's story maps kind of cleanly onto the abusive relationship between the Joker and Harley Quinn in the comics and the movies and stuff. And I thought that aspect of the story was very well executed. And I also didn't realize just how this movie is basically like a takedown of the modern comedy scene. It is like so relentless about that. And I was like, hell yeah. Like it just like it really, I don't know. You could feel a lever turning in the movie where Vera Drew kind of like goes back and forth between this personal, like, you know, here's my story, and then like turns on a flamethrower and just roasts the modern comedy scene, basically like putting this boys club mentality of places like Upright Citizens Brigade and Saturday Night Live on blast in just this massive way, and really like tearing into Lorne Michaels specifically. I thought that was hilarious. Like it really just pulls no punches in that regard. So I just thought like using a familiar structure, the kind of like I'm moving to the big city to chase my dreams kind of storyline, as like the foundation for this personal story laid on top of it, and then this like I don't know, like execution of capital C comedy. I just thought it was like really effective and totally unusual and really singular. So I came away very excited to see what the heck Vera Drew could do with a real budget. So I hope she gets the money too. I think she just won some prize at like the Gothams or something.
She won Breakthrough Director at the Gothams, which is really, really cool. And the comedy stuff, like the takedown of comedy, I think is what makes this so special, because Vera Drew, before she made this movie, she is known mostly as an editor and like a digital imaging technician. But she worked on like, you know, On Cinema and Comedy Bang Bang and a lot of stuff with like Tim and Eric and Nathan For You. I Think You Should Leave. Like she works in like a lot of this, like this comedy space that is removed from sort of like the SNL hub of comedy. And so to see her make the like that through line, I think is this is how I know that she's such a gifted editor, because it's so seamless, despite the fact that there are so many clashing visual styles in this movie. But I never am lost. I know exactly what is happening. I know why certain aesthetics are happening for certain stories. I think she's a genius. Like I genuinely think she's a genius.
Awesome. Well, yeah, you can rent The People's Joker for $5 right now. And I would definitely recommend checking this out, especially if you're like sick of the same old thing from Hollywood. Like this is definitely something that feels fresh and new and interesting. So The People's Joker is the name of the movie. I also caught up with A Different Man, which is Aaron Schimberg's directorial effort. I'm not sure. I don't recognize his name immediately, and I didn't do like a deep dive into his filmography or anything, but this is an A24 drama starring Sebastian Stan and Renata Renzva from The Worst Person in the World and Adam Pearson. Have you seen this one yet, BJ?
Yes. This movie is awesome.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So it's about a guy named Edward, who is played by Sebastian Stan, who has this facial condition that has resulted in disfigurement. And he is a struggling actor who has worked in some very small things, but lives in this crappy apartment and is kind of hoping for something bigger and better to come along. And he develops a crush on his new neighbor, played by Renzva, who wants to be a playwright. And the two of them kind of politely talk about how maybe she can write him a role in one of her plays one day. And the main thrust of the story starts when Edward undergoes this experimental surgery that removes the disfigurement and leaves him looking basically just like Sebastian Stan. And he adopts a new name, and he tells everyone that Edward is dead and he's living under this new name. And not long after that, he realizes that the neighbor actually has written a play with a disfigured character in the lead role. And when he tries to audition by wearing a mask to sort of recapture what he used to look like, he encounters another guy who's played by Adam Pearson, who actually is disfigured. And this guy is like charming and charismatic and funny and like slowly starts to kind of take over Edward's old life. And it's a really great concept for a movie. And Adam Pearson, you might recognize from Under the Skin with Scarlett Johansson, came out, I guess it was like 10 years ago now. But yeah, I thought the performances are all pretty strong. I don't know, BJ, like I guess at the end of the day, like I wasn't quite bowled over by this movie because I couldn't fully parse exactly what it was trying to say by the time it all wrapped up. So it kind of left me feeling a little underwhelmed. So I don't know if like we want to get into like nitty gritty details or anything, but like broadly speaking, could you tell me sort of what you thought the main message was from this movie, or like the main ideas that they were trying to get across? Or has it been so long since you've seen it? Okay.
Oh, sure. So the reason that this movie really hits with me is it has a parallel conversation with something that I have all the time with people as a fat woman, that my wife has all the time with people as a trans woman, and that many of my friends with disabilities have among like the disability community, is that so many people believe that the key to happiness is like a magic wand change. So in the case of Edward, like changing my face, this is going to make my life better. Everything's going to be perfect. But that's not true. Like it can help. Like I know so many fat women who like lose a ton of weight and then they're like, but wait, I'm still miserable. And I'm like, yeah, because that's not the only thing. Like you have to actually do internal work and make yourself a better, happier person in order to feel happier and more fulfilled. And so like we have that situation happening with Edward. And then when he, you know, takes on like his guy persona, where it's like, you thought this was going to like make your life better and everything was going to be great, but now you're watching somebody else succeed in the ways that you felt like you couldn't succeed, and now you're bitter and you're resentful towards it, and it's because you didn't actually do any internal work. Like, so this is a movie about why like internal work matters above all else, and also it's just like a great showcase for Adam Pearson to show everyone how awesome he is, which I love.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was really, really into this because it really does just kind of like, it just hits me in this conversation that I feel like I'm constantly having, and to see it so obviously presented, I found was like really, really refreshing. And the unfortunate reality too is that Hollywood also really, really sucks in terms of its representation of people with facial differences. We tend to treat characters as like villains or monsters or whatever. And this movie's like, no, he's the hero. Like the bad guy is actually the really hot Sebastian Stan, which I just love that. I love it so much.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so my takeaway was like, kind of like, be careful what you wish for kind of thing. And what you just said is a way more sophisticated version of that. So we're pretty much on the same page there. So
yeah, yeah.
I'm glad that I asked you. Okay, so the other movie that I wanted to mention, the last one for me, is a movie called September 5 or September 5th, I think is probably how I'm going to say it for the rest of this conversation. I've never actually heard anybody say the official title. So the representation of it is just September and the number 5. It is co-written and directed by Tim Felbaum, and it's about the 1972 hostage crisis at the Munich Olympics, as told through the eyes of the folks at ABC Sports, who were there to cover the Olympic Games, but who ultimately ended up spearheading the coverage of this international incident because they were physically closer to the action than the network's news division. Have you seen this one?
No. Okay. I really want to see this because I know Peter Sarsgaard's in it, and I'm like a weird Peter Sarsgaard kick right now. I don't know why.
Yeah. So he plays kind of like the big boss overseeing the Olympics coverage on the ground, but it's really more of an ensemble piece. And it has big roles for people like Ben Chaplin, who's a British character actor who's been around since the early 90s. And this actress, this German actress who I just discovered recently called Leonie Benesch. I think that's how you pronounce her name. She recently starred in the movie that I talked about not too long ago on this podcast called The Teacher's Lounge from a couple years ago. And then, yeah, Peter Sarsgaard's in it. And then John McGarrow is also in this. And he was great in Past Lives last year. He was in First Cow as well. He's been in a bunch of things. But he was the standout to me. And yeah, overall, I thought this was like a really solid thriller. I think most of the action takes place in one room. And it all feels like incredibly well-designed and well-researched. It's like, I imagine it looked exactly like this in real life. And it feels as if every single line spoken or every action that somebody took was actually said or done in real life on the actual day. Maybe even sometimes to the movie's detriment. Like, I love a detail-oriented process film, maybe more than the next person, but this one occasionally feels like maybe it gets a little too bogged down in detail sometimes. But yeah, I guess my big takeaway from this one is like, it's kind of about the danger of bad journalism. And journalism has been relentlessly attacked in this country for many years now, and that will definitely continue over the next 4 years at least. But there are also like real problems in this industry that have more to do with like the demands of what it takes to make money in a crowded environment, and like coverage being shaped for reasons that have nothing to do with what's actually best for the public interest. And so something I kind of took away from this movie is that like, if the press is going to regain the trust of the American people, they/we have to actually do the job correctly to the best of our abilities, and like make sure stories are solid and not give in to the worst instincts of publishing first just to score more eyeballs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, I'll get off my soapbox, but like that's kind of one of the big lessons or themes or whatever of this movie, September 5th. So good movie, good stuff. I enjoyed watching it. I think that one is still in like limited release in some theaters, so I'm not sure when that's going to be streaming, but I want to say it's a Paramount movie, so it may end up on Paramount Plus sometime soon. So keep an eye out for that one. So yeah, that's what I've been watching. So we have a couple more sections to get into before we wrap it up. So what have you been eating recently, BJ?
Okay, so this is less eating, more drinking, but as I've talked about on our water cooler episodes before, I'm a big fan of the Dropout streaming service and all of the original shows they have. And one of the shows they have is called Dirty Laundry, which is where a bunch of people are in a group together and they will reveal a secret and they have to try to guess who that secret belongs to. And it can range from like, you know, something very, very small to something that's like very huge. And it's very fun to watch. And there's a drink component to the game, that how you reveal that you're the person who's the secret belongs to is that you take a sip of your drink. And one of the Dropout like players in this is Grant O'Brien, who is a comedian, but also has worked a lot as a bartender in both like New York and LA. So he's really big on cocktails. He has his own like cocktail, like Patreon thing. He's really into it, but he makes cocktails for this show. And there's a different cocktail every single episode. And then they'll also make like these little clips of like, here's how you can make the cocktail at home. And so I've started making a lot of the cocktails on the show that are not just like classic cocktails. Like, oh, here's how to make a Manhattan. I already know how to make a Manhattan. But every once in a while, they'll do something original. And so the one that I had recently that I was really into is a drink called Grant the Beachcomber, and is one of his kind of drinks that he made. And it includes macadamia nut liqueur, which is a liqueur I've never had before. And it was very good. Two different types of rums, and then pineapple Amaro. And there's only like one company in the world that makes it. So like, it's not a cocktail that you can order at a bar really, unless someone has the pineapple Amaro, which likely they don't. I might be able to find it out here because I'm sure there's some like kiss ass cocktail place that'll have it. But it's been really fun to just like make these drinks that I never would have had. And since so many of the drinks that he makes are ones that he made when he was in New York, like I love that cocktail culture changes depending on what region that you're in. And so it's a way for me to try like the house or staple cocktails from like other parts of the country that I've never lived in. And I don't know, it's just been really fun to kind of do all of that.
I really like that as an idea. I've never really thought about, sort of going region by region and checking out what the popular cocktails are. But that seems like maybe a project that I'll undertake in 2025 if I'm feeling up to it.
It was this thing that like kind of... it was like a nice aha moment, because I also, the Patreon podcast he does is called What You've Been Drinking, and he interviews like other comedians, and they'll talk about like, oh, I've been drinking IPAs. Okay, well, why do you drink IPAs? Because there is, you know, a reason why people eat or drink what they do. And he was talking to comedian Jacob Wysocki, who's in like a ton of stuff, and Jacob was drinking a Paloma, and he's like, well, he's from Southern California, and like tequila culture is a big thing in Southern California, so a Paloma is like, you know, the stock drink that you probably had when you were really young, versus like if you're in the Midwest is big on like whiskey and bourbon and like drinks that make you feel warm because it's cold all the time. And so like a rum and coke, or like a, you know, a whiskey and coke or something, like that's a drink that you probably have when you're first starting to learn how to drink, and like every bar has it. And I was like, oh my god, I've never thought about it that way. Like, depending on where you live and like what is being you know, like what is being brewed, what breweries do you have, what distilleries do you have, like that's probably gonna change like your introduction to alcohol. And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, awesome. So that's Dirty Laundry on Dropout. People can check that out. And then let's talk in this last section about what you've been playing. You're back on your Neopets bullshit, BJ.
Listen, I've never left my Neopets bullshit. Neopets turned 25 last month. It was the 25th anniversary celebration. So there were like little meetups all around the country. I did not go to the Los Angeles one, not because I didn't want to, but because I had to go to a screening that night. So I saw Wicked instead of going to the Neopets LA hub. I would have gone. But the 25th anniversary is what kind of pushed me over the edge, because I knew that Neopets had a mobile game, like that's just like a tie-in, and I didn't realize that it's just essentially Candy Crush. It's called Fairy Fragments. It works just like Candy Crush, but uses, you know, imagery of Neopets, and also after certain points of playing, like I can take the points that I've earned through the mobile game and transfer those points to my actual Neopets account. So it's been good, because I like the Candy Crush style, like match puzzle games quite a bit. I was really big into Bejeweled, which shows my age, because everyone's like, oh, it's like Candy Crush. I was like, no, it's like Bejeweled, but I say that and I sound like I'm speaking a dead language, because no one knows what Bejeweled is anymore. But it's just like those games. I downloaded it last week. I'm already like on level 150. It's a thing. Whatever, it's fine. I like it. I'm having fun.
God bless you, BJ. God bless you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I. Man, your just like continued devotion to Neopets is very amusing to me, because I have no idea. Like, still, you've described it a number of times. Like, I've never encountered Neopets in the wild. I've never, not literally, but I've never, like, I don't think I've met anybody else who really knows what Neopets even are. Like, this was just not something that was a thing in my particular circles or whatever. So it's just very endearing seeing your continued love for this property all these years later. So,
listen, I contain multitudes. I am still a daily active subscriber to the game that I started playing 25 years ago when I was a literal child. And I also watch movies like Lizzie Borden's Working Girls and watch sex workers bully men. You know what? We can have many, many layers to our personalities.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's going to do it for today's show. You can find more about a lot of what we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you all tomorrow.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.